Okay, this is another question and answer session. And the way it works, like a couple weeks ago, we were really blessed by this. I'm going to go down to the lower level in a moment. I just want everybody to hear this and see me just for a moment. If you have a question, now I have a couple questions here that while we're transitioning, or if there's no questions after a while, that people have asked me. So I'm going to interject these, but I'll wait until nobody raises up their hand or there's a break or a respite to do that. So if you have a question, speak loudly into the mic. If I can't answer it from the Bible, I'll tell you honestly. Okay, God really blessed it last time that I was able to address, and I don't think I made any huge, I didn't feel like I need to apologize for anything last. I feel really nervous about extemporaneously speaking. That's why I don't do it. People remember I used to memorize my, I used to have a good memory, and I could memorize my whole sermon. I used to present my whole sermon from memory. I would memorize it, present it, you know. And then I transitioned, you know, to longer messages, and so I didn't have enough time to memorize them. So I write them out fully. There's a very rarely do I present anything extemporaneously. And one of the reasons is I said so many stupid things. I'll just be honest. And I was apologizing the whole week, you know. So, and that wasn't efficient at all. So I feel very nervous about this. So I pray, Lord, that you'd give me the words to speak, and I would be quick to admit it when I'm wrong. Okay. So does somebody have a first question?
Valerie has a question.
I'm afraid I don't like to ask questions. In the YouTube video of the rise and fall of dispensational, I can never say that word right.
Dispensationalism.
Yeah, dispensationalism. And I watched the whole thing, but, and I could be totally off because the fall of dispensationalism, but there's still dispensationalism today.
Well, not only is there first, and they made that point, some of it was implicit, Valerie, they made that point that within the churches, here's the distinction he was making. Great question, by the way. In fact, I have some, anyway, I had some notes in regard to that question. In the churches, it's by far, here in America, David is coming next week from across the pond, and he made the great point, you know, last time he was here, that hardly anybody believes it, in the place where John Nelson Darby came from. Remember, he was, he's English or Irish. And so he's the innovator, like, dispensationalism. The original form of dispensation is vastly, profoundly different than its present form. And that's another point that they made in the interview. And by the way, Ed, I said this in the Adult Sunday School, we were talking about some of this, we didn't get far. But Ed is reading that book on Kindle. I've ordered it, so I haven't received it yet. So we're discussing that book on Thursday morning, if any men are available. We did, and Ed will continue this week, how about? If he's going through the book, and as soon as I get it by Kindle, that he ordered, I ordered it and it still hasn't arrived. As soon as I get it, I'm starting to go through it too. So it's called, if you want to order it, The Rise and Fall of Dispensationalism. You can watch the video. It's the link I sent you twice, I think, this week. Yeah, twice this week. The latest one yesterday I sent you. Listen to that. It's Albert Mohler, great scholar, president, what's it called? Southern Seminary? Southern, Andrea, is it Southern Seminary? Southern Baptist Seminary. Yeah, it's Southern, I know, but is it Southern Baptist? It is, he is Baptist, yeah. He's Reformed Baptist. But Southern, we think, Baptist Seminary, he completely changed that seminary. I mean, it's a profound story how his influence on that seminary, you guys. He's a great man of God. He's a first-rate, intellectually, the sparks were flying between these two guys. Did you see? It was like, it was electric, that interview. That's why I like it. So Al Mohler's a first-rate scholar. And this Daniel Hummel is a young scholar whose parents were missionaries. And he grew up dispensational. Now he sees, it's clear from what he says. He's, you know, he sees it different. He knows dispensationalism is not biblical. You know, well, parts of it are, but the main thing isn't. And so he wrote this book, but he wrote it, if you weren't there in the Sunday School, according to Amazon, you know, review, which is written by English majors who can't get any other jobs. he wrote it in an ironic and measured way. And that's a great description of the way. It's not a hit piece. He loves his parents and he loves many dispensationalists. He just says they're wrong and they are. And that's the way I've tried to present. I have many I love. It would be a disservice if I said it was true. I would be trying to fill the pews and fill the coffers instead of giving you the truth. I never have done that, and I never will. I don't prove it. I don't take a vote of scholars, or I wouldn't be amillennial. I see what the scripture teaches in regard to redemptive history. What fits? And then I teach it. And I'm just, you know, one of my big problems is I read the scriptures, see what fits, then I preach it. That's one of my, I've always done that. Think of what, you guys have been around for a while. And think about it, you guys. You've seen that the things I've said is true, and you believe them now. Except the things I've confessed aren't true. Then neither one of us believe it, right? We've changed quite a bit. This is another one. Another one's coming down the pike. Dominionism is wrong too. That's what I started. It's wrong. It's led to the stuff like we saw 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And it will lead to more. It's dangerous. Dominionism in its extreme forms is very dangerous. Dispensationalism is wrong, okay? I said that from the beginning. And I'll continue the truth because we're 1 Timothy 3:15b. The church is the pillar and bulwark of the truth. Pillar there means, look it up, proclaimer. That's how they used to proclaim things on pillars. Bulwark, that's a military term for defending. We are the proclaimers and defenders. If we don't do it, who does it? Cable news? That's what some of you are living on. That proclaims, really. You're getting the truth from that. No, you're not. You see where that led you. None of those guys are, I won't get into that. It's horrendous. This is our authority. Show me where I'm wrong, and I'll listen to you. If you don't, then be convinced when I show you that it's scriptural. That's all I'm saying. Now, these guys show us the history. Well, in his book, and it's called The Rise and Fall of Dispensationalism, Daniel Hummel shows us the history in an ironic and measured way, the history of dispensationalism and how it rose in prominence in America and now is falling in prominence because hardly any scholars or any theologians within the seminaries believe it anymore. In Dallas Seminary, the hotbed, the main bastion of dispensationalism, they stopped believing it and they changed it into progressive dispensationalism in the 90s. Do you know why they changed it? Were you listening to the interview? They changed it because none of the prophecies of the dispensationalists, including the head of Calvary Chapel, he predicted, you remember what he predicted? You've read it. In 1982 or 83, he predicted the rapture would occur. Then we had that book that said the 88 reasons why it would occur in 88, which sold millions of copies. And you know what that guy did? He republished it under a different title, the 89 reasons why it would occur in 89. He never came back and said he was wrong. If he lived during Old Covenant times, that guy would have been stoned. And yet people still believe this stuff. Chuck Smith predicted the rapture would occur in 82 or 83. He's on, go on, you can listen to it. It's recorded, okay? He was wrong. Why didn't he say he was wrong? what? That's just not integrity. I love it. I used to listen to his program, and I did when I got here. You know, he fed me for several years when we were in the Calvary Chapel. I love him. The man presents things in an ironic way, you know. And a lot of the things he said was right, and he's saved a lot of people. Yeah, he's wrong on that, okay? Show me in the Bible how he's right, and I'll believe you, and I'll be preaching it next week, okay? This is our authority, not people, and not your opinion, and not cable news. I can't be any more direct than that, okay? All right, so, Valerie, you see how I answer questions? So here's the distinction you're making. In the academic world, which eventually filters into the churches, it's just about dead. In the churches, drive down 95, you'll see a big poster of the rapture there, and you'll see the biggest church in this area, which isn't going to last, by the way, I'll say that. I'm not a prophet, but it can't last because the guy isn't called, but anyway, I won't get into that. The biggest church in the area is dispensational and dominionist. I'm not surprised. And political. I knew that. I knew that 20 years ago. Never going to preach it because I'm going to face God and none of those things are true. That's, you know. So I warned people not to go to that church, but when I started warning them, they started going there. So now I'm in a real dilemma. The more I warned them, the more people went and left this church. What do you do? Put yourself in my shoes. What do you do about that? Do you not warn them? No, God said still warn them. Okay, maybe they'll remember afterwards. I guarantee they won't come back and say they were wrong. Hey, by the way, let me say this. As people start coming back to our church from leaving like place, because they will, because this stuff is, I'm not going to say a thing to them. I'm saying it to you to equip you. I'm going to welcome them back. And I'm not going to demand they apologize. Now, if they're leaders, I am. I'm going to be pressing them if they're leaders. But if they're not, and they won't be leaders in the church for a long time, any of you know, I'm getting better at discerning that. When they come back, we welcome them and we love them and we preach the truth to them like nothing occurred, okay? So that's how I would encourage you to treat these things too, because some people will come back. I don't think many, because people are too proud nowadays, but some will, okay? Anyway, that's the long answer. Anything else, follow up? That's a great question. I had that down, Valerie. So, and no, Tori, I can't answer it in 3 minutes. No, anything.
I was pretty good. I don't know if Valerie got to watch the Eschatology Matters that we watched in Sunday school.
Hey, Tori, speak more directly into the, go ahead.
Okay.
Good.
I haven't watched it yet.
Watch that, because what
now,
he said.
Now, which one, what did you
the
say?
The Eschatology Matters.
Yeah, there's another one on Eschatology Matters that I watched.
In that video, he went through and explained what Craig.
That's harder now, Tori, isn't it, to understand?
Yeah.
But now that she's watched that, she'll be able to understand it. Yeah, good point. Eschatology Matters has some good one, has another interview with Daniel Hummel, and it's really good too. Yeah, it's a little bit harder to follow, but it's good. Yeah, anyway. Next question. Excellent question there, Valerie. While you're waiting for another question, can I interject something? Okay, I'll interject one of mine. I have like four of them. This is a real practical one, you guys. Now, I wanna equip you for discernment. And I'm going to start working in some things that are happening in current events, okay, if that's all right. Because I think that was part of the problem. I didn't warn people up, you know, with the whole thing. The last election cycle, I didn't warn people. And so I think that was part, I should have given more practical advice. And everybody was getting off the rails, you know. So I'm going to start doing that with current events more and more. I'm going to show how these current events fit into redemptive history in the scripture. I'm going to try to do that more practical stuff. So some of you may have seen Aaron Rodgers this week on Monday Night Football. He got injured on like the fourth or fifth play. Great quarterback, considered one of the, he's going to make the Hall of Fame. He had one Super Bowl win. He has now been traded from his original team, the Green Bay Packers. He replaced Brett Favre, another likely Hall of Famer, and was a great quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. One Super Bowl win as compared to Tom Brady, 7, I think, anyway. But he's 39, Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady was, what, 47, Bill, or 46? He's 47 now, I think. But so you, some of you may have listened to some things he said. Okay, he had been interviewed before Monday Night Football. I never watch it, but I watched a small interview before Monday Night Football with Aaron Rodgers. And he was talking about positive thinking and about changing things. Now, he really believes that. He's not a Christian. He never has confessed to be a Christian that I know of. He's New Agey. And in fact, it's the Antichrist spirit. I'm saying this. I'm going to lose some more people. Okay. Okay, especially New York Jets fans. I don't care. Okay. I want you to discern the Antichrist spirit in what he says. And then I'm going to give an example of Deion Sanders. Okay, in a moment. Aaron Rodgers, how do I know it's Antichrist spirit? Well, because he's trying to speak things and think things into existence. Did you know that only God can do that? That is one of the biggest heresies you can say, that I can think things and they're going to exist. That's not Christianity. Christianity, you guys, like I explained this morning at the beginning, because we had an incident out here, you know, involving the van. Christianity is we're positive about everything because we believe not only the so-called positive things, but also the negative things are from God. All things are from God. He's sovereign over everything, even evil. We believe that both the wins, the ties, and the losses, and the wipeouts are from God. And we also believe that the losses and wipeouts are more of a blessing to us than the wins. I love Christianity. Now, do we all act that way? No. That takes much more faith to see when I lose by 50, or when I hurt my Achilles, the story, you see how everything fits together. When I injure my Achilles on the fourth or fifth play, and I'm out the whole season, that's from God. Do you know what Aaron Rodgers said? Did you hear the follow-up interview? He used messianic language about himself. I will rise again. But that's what they believe. They believe they're small gods. Gods with a small case G. See, I'm going to use more current events. Now think about that and question me if you have any questions. Now see, Aaron Rodgers does not profess to be a Christian. Deion Sanders does. Deion Sanders, I don't think, is Antichrist spirit. I think it's real immature Christianity. Real immature. Because he believes that if you believe something strong enough, this is TBN stuff. He's pushing. I'm giving you discernment. Please think about it. I'm trying to equip you with what the Bible teaches. He believes if you think about something enough and believe it enough and get other people to believe it, a whole team of 20 and 22-year-olds, you know, that they'll win more games. That may be the case. I think he's a great motivator. I would, you know, might even practically hire him, you know. But what he's saying is not true from the Bible. Because the best thing for that team spiritually will be their first loss, which almost occurred last night. I got up this morning and looked at the scores. Colorado State nearly beat them. But they won. Hey, I'm not rooting against him or for him. I have no horse in that race. Now, if it was Arizona Cardinals or the Suns or something, I'd have a horse in the race. But I don't care, you know. And I think he's a great motivator. He is not, that is not Christian. Now, do you want to follow up on that push? So I don't know if he's a Christian or not. He may just be someone who's attached to the faith, the word faith movement, to be more successful in his field. I don't know. He professes to be a Christian. Now, I'm talking about somebody, I don't normally name names, but I'm just talking because we all know him. I don't know if he's a Christian. I wouldn't say he was a Christian or not. I will say Aaron Rodgers isn't because he says he isn't. And the Antichrist spirit is all over him. Okay? He's not the Antichrist. Don't go home and say, Pastor Craig said that Aaron Rodgers is the Antichrist. No, I'm not. I say he has the spirit. In the first century, John says that the spirit was, many people had the Antichrist spirit. As times go on, more and more will have the Antichrist spirit. That's not Christianity, you guys. That's not Christianity. It's the opposite of Christianity. What's so horrible is so many Christians in churches believe that's Christianity. The best things that happen to us, think of your Christian walk, are the hardest. The best thing that's ever happened in the world, you know what it was? It was deicide. It was God the Father putting to death the Son of God. Nobody would be saved unless that horrendous, horrific act had been carried out. The very worst event in human history was actually the greatest event in human history. It's the same with your life. The worst things in my ministry that have happened to me have been the best. The people leaving that struck at my success, this latest round, people I love, my best friend in the church, I don't have best friends. I learned a long time ago you can't, and you shouldn't, because you need to deal with everybody the same. But who I would consider, and I think he considered me a best friend, he came back from moving and he told me, we had lunch together. It was a great lunch, ironic lunch, a peaceful lunch, Cheryl Casallo. And no, I love it. And he was leaving. I had a little twinge, but it's happened so often. I said, well, praise God, I'll be praying for you. And anytime you want to come back, you're welcome back. Then he gave me the reason and I told one elder, the only elder that we have now, all the other elders left. Because of what I'm teaching, the truth, okay? But I've been through it, you guys. I've been through it when you've gone through four cycles, it doesn't affect you that much. I know he's going to build up the church numerically. I told that to Valerie this week. I said, Valerie, what we know, we've been through a lot of rodeos now together. You know, all of us, we've been in the church, Miss Mary and all of us. We've seen five cycles of this. I teach a hard truth. People leave. It sorts out the church. People start coming. Again, it builds up. I teach another hard truth, a different one. They leave. This is the fifth or fourth cycle. you're going to see more and more people. I guarantee you. I know how it works. But then I'll teach another. That's how it always will work, saints. Read John chapter 6. That's how. Whenever Jesus got a big crowd, he taught a hard truth. And in John 6, he said, you remember what he taught in John 6? If you eat my flesh and drink my, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. Everybody left, and Peter was ready to leave. Where are you going? Well, I would probably go, Peter's really honest. I'd probably go, Lord, but I don't have anybody else to go to for the words of life. Yeah, Peter, same with me, same with little Pastor Craig. I don't have anywhere else to go. Where am I going to run? This is it. You have the words of life, Jesus. And even though you bring these hard things, especially since you bring these hard things that transform me. I've been transformed 5 million times more through hard things than through people clapping me on the back. Okay? Way more. It's given me steadfastness. It's given me boldness. It's given me more love. Believe it or not, I don't have much. It's given me more patience, believe it or not. And it does to you too, saints. See how that cuts against what we hear popularly from some of the great stars. Don't go to the media nowadays to find your mentors. I'm warning you real strictly, you guys. Don't do that. You can find them. They're hard to find, mentors, real mentors. It's very hard to find any pastors now that are just given the whole truth regardless of the consequences. We're all calculating how we can keep a congregation and keep enough money to do whatever they do with their money. And excuse me, but some of it's so frivolous you can't believe it. But they're trying to calculate how they can speak part of the truth and please God and keep enough people. I don't care. I do not care. I want to teach the whole truth because I'm going to stand before God soon. And he's going to assess me and my ministry, the role he's given me and the ministry I've given me, by whether I taught the truth. And I want him to say, I long to hear, he's not going to call me pastor because that, we learned last week that role's gone. I long to hear, Craig, whatever, I'm going to receive a new name like you are, the scripture says. Whatever he calls me, I don't care. Bub, he can call me. I may be Bub. He says, Craig, well done, good and faithful servant. I long to hear that. Okay? I long to hear it. I'm looking forward to it. It's coming soon for us. Debbie, right? It's coming soon, soon and very soon. Debbie and I are growing old together here, so. Or I'm losing some of it. So I love Debbie. Okay. That's what I wanted to bring up. Any follow-up questions on that? I'm not bad-mouthing anybody. I'm not. Okay, believe me, I'm not, you guys. I have nothing. I want to give you discernment so you're not identifying, what a great Christian. Well, I don't know. What a very effective football coach for right now. Yeah. What a great Christian. I'd look elsewhere. Okay? I mean, that's just a suggestion. Whatever. Okay. All right.
I think, yes. Melody has a question.
Who is it? Melody, speak up. Melody, we love you.
Thank you, Pastor. Pastor, you were talking about the football guy. I'm not really like a football player. I know who Deion Sanders is, plays for the Cowboys.
I didn't hear that. Speak a little bit slower.
I said, I know that Deion Sanders plays for the Cowboys. I don't know who that other man is.
No, he's a coach now. That was a long time ago.
Okay.
And he was one of the only ones, now Bill would give you this factoid, but Deion Sanders was the only one in modern times besides Bo Jackson to play professionally. Now, in the old days, they did that a lot, but I mean modern times, however you define that. To play two professional sports at once. He played football for the Cowboys and then for the Atlanta Falcons, didn't he, for a while? And he played, and this is the connection, he played baseball for the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, okay.
But Bo Jackson was actually a better double player, wasn't he? Wouldn't you? You remember some of his catches in the All-Star game where he ran up the fence after he caught anyway? Okay. The guy was, Bo Jackson was like nobody, yeah, athlete. He's the greatest athlete of our era, Bell, maybe, I don't know. Our old guy era. Okay, Melody.
So my question, I don't know really if it's a question, but you're basically saying that they're using like the Bible, kind of,
yes,
twisting it to New Age because the
no,
Bible's...
No, I'm not saying that with Deion Sanders. I'm saying it's more TBN stuff,
okay,
like when you turn on TBN. It's definitely that way with Aaron Rodgers. I'm making a distinction between Aaron Rodgers and Deion Sanders.
Right.
Although they're both thinking that, they're both thinking similar lines. But there's a big difference between the Antichrist spirit on Aaron Rodgers and many other people. And in my opinion, I'm trying to use my discernment, you guys, from the Bible just to say this and to present it to you. And you check it yourself. But a big difference between that and what Deion Sanders is doing. And I like Deion Sanders.
Right, because
I like Aaron Rodgers.
Sanders is kind of like coming into agreement with the, it sounds like anyways that he's coming into agreement with them, that saying, you know, we're going to win this. And then the other guy.
He's the coach now, Melody, so he's right. Really, he's using that as a coaching technique.
Okay.
Which is a good coaching technique. You will win more games.
And then
but
the
then
other.
What happens when you lose?
Right. And then the other one
that's
is kind of.
You see what I'm saying? Okay.
The other one is kind of like speak things as though they are, like from the Bible, how they say speak things as though they are.
That's right. That's the point.
Okay.
Good, Melody. That's the point. Both of them believe that. Aaron Rodgers isn't getting that from the Bible. He's getting that from New Age teaching. Deion Sanders, my understanding is he's getting that from the Bible. In fact, I've heard that and I've read a little bit about him. I don't study these guys. They're not my, I'm not a fanboy. I'm not a fanboy to anybody. Okay, I just have teams I like. I like the Suns because I came from Arizona. I don't even follow it anymore. I just watch ESPN at the end, the sportscast, to see the highlights. That's all I do. That's right. And TBN is very dangerous because what they're doing is trying to build up an empire money-wise on television. And there's some good television stuff, but most of it, you guys, is garbage. And what they're doing is trying to build up. There's truth in it, and people are authentically saved. And I would even go so far as to say, from Matthew 7, 21 through 23, because Jesus says this, that people are healed by these so-called faith healers. Some of them are healed sovereignly by God. Remember what Jesus says at the end of time there, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount? On that day, many will say, Lord, Lord, do we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty works in your name? And he will say to them, I will say to them, I never knew you, depart from me. I never knew you. That word new has to do with salvation. We've talked about it before. You were never saved. You can't lose your salvation anyway. I never knew you. I didn't foreknow you. That's the first link in the golden chain of salvation in Romans 8, 29. See, I'm linking everything together. I never knew you. You were never authentically saved. Although people thought you were because you had a big ministry and you spoke over people and some people were healed by my sovereignty. Think, Melody, about somebody. Let's say there's a true believer who's been misled and can't read the Bible anymore, and all they have to look at on television, you know, is TBN. I mean, there are probably people like that in America. And so they believe this without having any good teaching. They can't go to church because they aren't able or whatever. And so God can still speak to my understanding if they read their book. But anyway, let's say they can't read it. This scenario is becoming less and less likely. But anyway, and let's say they get sick and a Benny Hinn healing, okay, who's obviously a false. I mean, if you don't know that Benny Hinn's false, I'm sorry. If you watch anything on TBN, God bless you. Come up and we'll pray over the elders. Me and Tori will pray over you afterwards. Well, now, unless they've added some good show, but anything that regularly on TBN. These guys are so, it's so off. It's trying to attain success, my God, using Christianity. That's evil. That's evil. And that's evil in a real heavy way. Okay, but that lady, the older lady, maybe God will sovereignly heal her. Because he wants to. God wants to. And it's a blessing to the lady, if it is. When we die, it's the greatest blessing. But it's a healing or some pain she has. But it's not Benny Hinn. It's God working through Benny Hinn? Yes, but he isn't a believer. He works through everyone. He works through unbelievers. We've learned that. You see how all the truths have to be put together? So just because somebody gets healed at a Benny Hinn service, don't assume it's not a real healing. I've always taught you that. It probably isn't because they have those guys they convince and they have shills and everything. Most of these guys do, or they wouldn't be able to continue to do it. Most of them are false, I'd say. I don't know which are which, though. You know, but I do know they're false. How do I know Benny Hinn's false? Because of his teachings. I won't tell you his view of the Trinity. It's heretical. It's absolutely heretical. And I mean, a lot of his other teachings are too. Anyway, I'm going to be more bold on these things because a lot of people, I didn't realize until this past election how many people were watching cable news. I didn't know. And then I found out. You all are. Okay, anyway. Except Barbara and Carl.
Yeah, I just want to say this might help.
They told me they hadn't heard any of these things I was talking about. Okay, go ahead.
Just so this might help you guys out. The TBN stands for Theologically Bad Network. Just to help you out.
Okay, Tori, we're supposed to be, what are we supposed to be now? We're supposed to be measured and ironic. No, anyway.
I'll measure that later. Do you have a question?
So my question is...
Here's a budding woman theologian here in Anita. She's got a fine theological mind. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Now, don't disappoint us. No, go ahead.
You're going to make me forget my question.
Like you, Andrea. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
In the Bible, there's a reference, I think it's in Revelations, that talks about those whose names weren't in the Book of Life.
That's right.
Okay, can you explain that to me?
That's election. That's divine election. Now, look, here's what I had down, another one to answer your question from this morning in this question-answer period. So I'm going to do it right now. So in the adult Sunday school, Anita asked, what is Calvinism? And then Tori said, explain it to us in 3 minutes. No, he didn't really. Sorry, Tori, I'm not going to let you forget that. I can't explain anything in 3 minutes. I can't explain what I ate for breakfast in 3 minutes. Don't you understand? Okay. So Calvinism, I'm going to summarize it, because this way, and it's much more than this, because we could talk about his eschatology, his soteriology, his ecclesiology, and everything. He's the greatest, he's considered by scholars both liberal and, both conservative and liberal scholars, to be the greatest theologian of the Reformation. Okay, that's just accepted. He's written, arguably, this is consensus, he's written the greatest systematic theology. You know what a systematic theology is? It's what Wayne Grudem did in his book. So he sets out the different topics and says, John Calvin is considered to have written the greatest systematic theology in the history of the church. Okay, he's from the Reformation period. Okay, born in the late 16th century, which is the 1500s. Okay, kind of a contemporary, I think, with he was living when Shakespeare was living. Anyway, so just to give you a historical, you know, little hook there. So, but in any case, here's how it's normally simply defined, okay, by the acronym TULIP. Remember, an acronym is a word that, a familiar word, it's a mnemonic device so we can remember teachings. It's the way I used to memorize facts, you know, in school. If I couldn't connect them to anything else, I would make up a mnemonic device. I would think of some word that each letter in the word represents the first word of the concepts I was memorizing. So TULIP, T-U-L-I-P, it is an acronym, okay, that designates the five main teachings, we would say. Now, there's some qualifications, I know, Andrea. Five main teachings of Calvinism. Now, we need to understand that this TULIP came into existence because of Arminianism, which is the main pushback to Calvinism. Most churches are Arminian. So as I go through the TULIP, I'll tell you what they believe. Now, it's all mixed. Like if you go to John MacArthur's, well, anyway, John MacArthur believes in all five of these teachings. So his soteriology, I'll quote John MacArthur when I'm talking about salvation. In fact, he's one of the great expositors of our time. He's wrong. I'm so ashamed of him, the way he handled that. You know, I'm just really ashamed of the way he handled it. And people were listening to him, and I thought, okay, whatever. He's dispensational. That isn't the reason he handled this last thing. He's dominionist, too. That's why he handled the situation wrong that came down the pike. I mean, you know, the COVID thing, he handled it terribly wrong. I'm ashamed of him, the way he handled it. And then he began to lie about what was going on in his church. And so I said, I'm never listening to him again. And then God corrected me, because I know he's right. And so I would be missing a lot in his soteriology and other stuff. And he did lie. He lied, and it's substantiated. I can show you why. And plus, you guys, I sent to my elders, they used to be plural until COVID, I sent to my elders something that, you know, at first they didn't believe, and then they did believe. I think at least Tori believed it. At the beginning of COVID, John MacArthur said that we should submit to the authorities. Then, I know what happened because I know what he did. He has such a big church that he knew he wasn't going to be able to support, because people weren't going to come, so he wasn't going to be able to support. They would have paid him, but the support staff. And so what he did is you remember during COVID, if you were a business, a small business, yeah, oh boy, all this is connected, you could get money from the government. Now, that wasn't payback money. Does everybody understand that? Small businesses here in town got COVID money to pay their employees and all over the United States. It was millions and millions of dollars that was given by the government. And then people were saying to me in the church, well, it's a government conspiracy. And so they're giving these people, okay, well, figure that one out, okay. The whole thing was so, it got so muddled that I just withdrew. I just said, okay, if you want to believe it, let's wait till the, and then I'll teach on it. And that this whole teaching I've been doing was inspired by COVID and all the incredibly unbiblical things that Christian leaders were saying. So I don't blame you guys. I really don't, except if you're watching cable news. And then I blame you. Because you're not going to get a straight scoop from either one. Any. I'm not for any one of them. I don't care. I'm not watching it. I'm going here. That's why I get up every morning. I read this. I listen to my mentors while I'm shaving. And then I go and meet Ed on Thursday mornings. And otherwise, I'm preparing my messages. Okay, I'm not saying you should live that lifestyle. That's my lifestyle. Okay, but what I am saying, that's why I don't get sucked into these things. And then I try to show you, and 3/4 of the church leaves. Okay. God's going to turn that into good. I'm not Deion Sanders. I said from the beginning, God's going to bless this. Stay. God's going to bless this. And he's going to. And he is. We have the best congregation we've ever had. And it's going to increase in numbers too. And then I'll teach another hard thing. You can guarantee it. I don't know what it is. But if we're moving, he gives us more light. If we're growing, we get more and more light. Okay? Does everybody see that? Okay, TULIP. No, I can't answer in 3 minutes. Okay. Total depravity is T. I don't have time to say. Because of Adam's fall and the imputation of Adam's sin to all people, everyone's born in sin. Now, see, Anita, that means more than you're born with a sin nature. It means the sin of Adam was imputed or reckoned the moment he sinned to the entire human race. Every one of Adam's offspring, so all of humanity, is a sinner. The deepest reason they're sinners on 3 counts. We're sinners because we sin. We're sinners because we have a sin nature passed down because of the fall. The deepest reason we're sinners is the imputation of Adam's sin. That's Romans 5. That's real important. You can't understand justification unless you understand the imputation of Adam's sin. That's Paul's point in the second half of Romans 5. Anyway, that's all hard. Actually, Anita might have picked up on some of that. She has a fine theological mind, like Andrea does here, and Barbara doesn't. Now, I started, and Sandy did. Here I go. See why I didn't do it last week? Okay. I'm going to leave somebody off. Okay. You is unconditional election. This is what you're talking about. The scripture teaches, Anita, and I can give you the, go to Romans 9. That's why Tori was kidding about Romans 9, because Arminians skip over Romans 9. You'll never hear a teaching on it. And if you do, it's so distorted. Romans 9 is the classic, the locus classicus, Andrea, the classic teaching in the Bible. The entire Bible teaches it, but it's the locus classicus, Romans 9, on election, divine election. It's very, very offensive. Most people who believe it don't teach it because they know they'll. When I started teaching, I began teaching it. Listen to how God did this. I began teaching the doctrines of grace. I didn't before because I didn't believe him. I was Methodist. I was trained in a Methodist seminary. I was trained in the most liberal Methodist seminary in the United States, the School of Theology of Claremont. It's since moved location because it lost all the people, all the funding, because it became so liberal. Okay, it's in the process of moving there from Claremont, okay, to another place, to a church of all things. It's become so small because of lack of funding, as it should, because what they were teaching is way off. Most of the people that were there, most professors, weren't saved. I was saved, but I had no theological grounding. So I couldn't distinguish. So I came here knowing how to preach salvation, and that's it. And that's what I did for 10 years. I preached salvation. We'd have altar calls almost every Sunday, right, Donna? First time you came, it was second Sunday I was here. Donna, Bill, who I loved, her husband, were your kids? Your kids were real little. They came, and then, Donna, were you saved here or were you saved beforehand? You say, do I get credit for you then? Responsibility too? Okay. A lot of people were, like Jerry said, he was saved. And he said, I said this, and he said, were you here when we honored Jerry? He said afterwards, he started crying. I'm becoming more like Jerry. I'm crying more at the drop of a hat. Oh, you know, and so I love Jerry, his soft heart. But he said Doris was saved. She was saved under my ministry. Whoa. I've never said that. I don't brag about it. Whoa. Most of the people in congregation. Now, Debbie, were you saved? Now, you were saved before, weren't you? You were saved. Some were. Debbie, just lie, okay? Just you can admit it to me later. You can admit it to me later. Just okay. I was trying to make a point. Anyway, no, some people were saved, very few. Barbara was saved. She was saved before, is what I'm saying. Because she came from a good Presbyterian church. You and Carl went to God bless you. Okay, so anyway. So. Well. Okay. Lutheran's closer to the Methodist. Closer to the truth. Okay. Unconditional election, that you is all important, Anita, because that's referring to the fact that God chose those before the foundation of the world for salvation. He didn't choose them for any other reason. He didn't think about it, Anita. He couldn't have chosen because, as this is what Arminians teach, they teach that election is based on foreknowledge. In other words, God looked down the corridor of time. He saw he was going to be faithful. Pastor Cred's going to be faithful, for I'm choosing him. Really? No, it's the opposite, Arminian. I'm faithful because he saved me. And he didn't save me. Think of Jacob and Esau. Who was better, Donna? Who was better, Donna? You're an Old Testament teacher for the youth. Who was better, Jacob? I would choose Esau over Jacob. Anybody would, knowing their lifestyle. He chooses the least likely, the worst sinners. Think of Nicodemus. Come on, you guys. He chooses the least likely, the worst sinners. Me, I had no interest in Christianity. He chose me, then he saved me in time at that Baptist revival meeting after my senior year in high school. I was there because I accidentally, while I was drunk, wrecked my uncle's car. Now, really, it was his daughter who played a big part in that, helped me to get drunk by supplying me because I wasn't old enough to buy. But she didn't take the rap. She put it on me. So my uncle made a deal with me. You don't have to pay for this car if you go to this youth meeting. I didn't know what it was. I had no interest in Christianity. When we grew up in our family, my brother Mark, my oldest brother, now lives in San Diego, he drove. He was the only one with the driver's license. We would take the money. It was only coins, you know, my mom gave us for Sunday school. And instead of going to Sunday school, we went to the across from the Methodist Church there in Phoenix, was a Circle K. We would buy soda and candy, and then we'd go out, and that was the longest hour. Waiting, sitting there. None of us, we all kind of hated each other, you know, as brothers, you know. So we would just sit there and sip, and I'd finish and just sit there, and I'd look at, you know, I think he had a clock on his dashboard. He'd turn it on every once in a while, look at the clock. That hour took about 3 weeks all the time. And then we'd drive home, so my mom thought we went. Nobody ratted us either. So we got away with that for several years, you know, just ditching, spending. So that's where so God's going to say, wow, I want him. I want that guy sitting using his offering money. I want him. No. He chose me because I'm one of the least likely. I had no interest in. He chose me, here's what the Bible says, because he loved me for his glory first and for my eternal good. So it's nothing in us. Otherwise, grace isn't grace, Paul says. If he chose you for salvation for any other reason except his grace, grace isn't grace. Think about it, Anita. Now they're calling you satanic for believing that. Have at it. See what I'm saying? I think they got it exactly wrong. That's grace. That's why, Anita, and the rest of you new people, we don't put any pressure on you. Because of grace. Because God is growing you up. I'm not going to use legalism to try to... I know all the tricks in the book. Every pastor does. I could use force to get you to come back, Tanya. Bet I could. I could. You're pretty strong. Maybe I wouldn't mess with you, Tanya. Maybe Anita either. Anyways, I could use techniques. No, then I would think, if I used techniques, if I found out what you liked and I gave it to you, I wouldn't know if you were saved or not. If you come back listening to this teaching, Tori, I think you must be saved. Because nobody would sit through this unless they were saved. But if you come back, it's because of the truth that's imperfectly being presented to me. If you find any legalism in this church, you'll probably hear it from me. Come and tell me, because I'll try to deal with it, you know. especially if it comes from me. And it will, because that's always, always a temptation to revert to legalism, because that's the way we all started. Christianity is the opposite of legalism. All the results of Christianity is from His grace. So at the end, Tori, when we all stand before God, people from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, we'll give glory to Him. And we'll take our crowns, which He's given us, for faithfulness, and throw it before the throne. Okay? Revelation 4, if you want to look at that, Donna, you know that. So U is unconditional election. L is limited atonement. Now, that's the hardest for people to swallow. John MacArthur, to his credit, teaches this. It's definite atonement. It teaches what the Bible teaches. This is the hardest for Arminians. Wouldn't you agree, Andrea? Limited atonement, or definite atonement, as it's called sometimes, means that when Christ died, He didn't die for everyone. Now, you're thinking John 3:16. I've taught on that before. Yeah, John 3:16, but that means something slightly different. And I'll come back and teach on that, you know, again, if you've forgotten what that means in its context. God so loved the world that He gave His only Son. That doesn't mean, because it's contradicted elsewhere in the Scripture, that Christ died for everyone. He didn't. He died for the elect. Otherwise, His death wouldn't have been sufficient. I mean, otherwise, He would have died. Otherwise, His death for those people wouldn't have had efficacy. And therefore, what He was doing wouldn't have been perfect. That's kind of tough, isn't it? We'll come back to that. But limited atonement, the L, the middle letter in TULIP, is the hardest to accept. Now, I was telling Doug that we have a common friend who, when they left the church, had this book. And it's so off. And it's from various authors. And that's basically what they said, Anita, that Calvinism is. He left the church. He was actually, I'm ashamed to say, an elder for a while. But he left the church. I love him, though. And he really has a fine mind, but I don't think he's saved. That's my opinion. Doug, if you know what I'm talking about, I'm sorry if, yeah. But I really don't think he's saved. But he stuck it for a while. He was like the soils, you guys. Don't you understand the parable of the soils? There's four soils. How many of them bear fruit? One. Now, three of the soils begin to grow. So two-thirds, check my math. Sandy's better at math than I, so check my math, Sandy. Three of the soils begin to grow. That means only one-third of the people who, I'm just taking this literally, I'm not going to insist on this, God can do it. But if you take it literally, okay, what that parable is saying, and parables aren't literal, I understand, but if you take that literally just for a moment, only one-third of the people who make professions of faith are authentically saved. How do we know they're authentically saved? They bear fruit. You'll know them by their fruit. You know why the others don't bear fruit? Read the parable again, because Jesus interprets it there in Mark 4 and Matthew 13. The other two soils, the rocky soil, you remember the other, and the thorny soil, don't produce fruit. Only the good soil does, so-called. The rocky soil doesn't produce fruit because of affliction, suffering. The sun represents the affliction, and the soil isn't deep enough. And so as soon as the affliction comes, have you ever seen that, Tori, in this church? Too many to count. And yet this guy stuck around. So I'm going to gather that that's what I say. If you come to me, God's not going to take a vote, Anita. How many think Tori is saved? Now Shauna. I think these two are saved. They have stuck, like I said last week, they've had 30 kids in youth group. Remember in the old days? Yeah. They've had 20 kids. They've had 15 kids. They've had 5 kids. They've had 2 kids. They've had Sundays with 1 kid. Usually my daughter when it's 1, because she loves it. It's the highlight of her week. My daughter, honestly, loved this couple. Well, maybe not more than Sandy, but more than me. No, that's true. And I love it because it makes my eyes tear. Because I love that they have somebody to look up to like that. You make me cry now. Okay, anyway.
All right, Jerry. Take it easy, Jerry.
What? Yeah, right. And I want you to cry too. No, and now as you head out, put the money in the... Oh, no. Okay. Okay, I is irresistible grace. Has everybody connected that with the effectual call? That's what irresistible grace is. The moment He saves you, He calls you in an effectual way. He gives you, this is the way John Piper, it's beautiful the way he describes it, He gives you the gift of faith. He creates faith in your soul. That's what I used, and that's what you used to confess Jesus. The faith produced by the effectual call of God the instant he saved us. Okay, see how all these things fit together? That's irresistible grace. You can't resist it. See, Arminians say you can resist grace. So, if you can, Arminian, then some of the glory goes to you. Where does it say that you get some of the glory for your salvation? It doesn't say that. So that's a puzzle piece that doesn't fit. I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to leave then. I don't want you to leave. I have exit interviews, you guys, and I'm really good at confidentiality. I never tell people these things. But I've had so many, and it's just like have you listened to anything I've said? Have you read your Bible, or are you watching television? Are you watching TBN? Are you watching cable, of all things? How do you come up with these things? Are you receiving them? Are people emailing you these things? I can't even fathom where people come up with these things because they're so unbiblical. I mean, I'm just being honest now. I'm kind of pouring out my heart. But I understand where they're coming from because we're in the last days. And great deceptions will come. And look, the people that don't make it now don't have a stand a chance as this unfolds. Because the greatest deception of all is coming with the person, the Antichrist, who is the fullest expression of the spirit of the Antichrist. We may be here, we may not. I don't know. You know, before die, not rapture. She got all excited, but no. Pull out your Larkin chart. Okay, so nobody knows what I'm talking about. Okay, P is perseverance of the saints. That's what I was talking about last week. Those who are authentically saved will fulfill their role. So if somebody comes in the church and says, I'm a pastor. I don't always say this, I don't always confront. You, at some point, we need to say, then why aren't you pastoring? Because everybody will fulfill their roles. Okay, now if they're retired, don't ask them that. You know, let's corner the retired pastor over here and ask, okay. Well, I mean, I've been through it all, you guys. I've seen it all. And I used to not see that, so we let people in the church, and they caused great devastation. They always seek out the weak people without even knowing it, and the weak people believe them and follow them down a path that's not good. Here's what it leads to. The false teacher or the false pastor, whatever you say, they leave the area, and the people who they've misled leave this church. But actually, that's a good thing. I forgot. I fell into Deion Sanders' thinking for a moment there. That's actually good. Yeah, but we still need to warn, Tori. We still need to warn and be. Okay, so that's TULIP. We'll come back to that, see. Is that 3 minutes, Tori? No, that was 30 minutes. Okay, other question. Okay, so that's TULIP, and that is a summary of Calvinism, but it doesn't entail Calvinism. Calvinism is a rich, systematic, it's a coherent teaching. We don't believe everything Calvin teaches. But if you dismiss Calvinism as satanic, I don't even know how to say. That's how I knew that person, our common thing. They couldn't be saved because you couldn't be. I'm just going to say it. You couldn't be. Because he is integral to Christianity. He's the greatest systematic theologians that the church in church history in 2,000 years has produced. Outside of Augustine, but Augustine is just creative too. He's diverse. He has a greater mind than Calvin, believe it or not. But he's not systematic. He just have things coming from, he's like Meredith Klein, but greater than Meredith, much greater than Augustine. It's just creativity mixed with brilliance, you know, creates Augustine. So the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, for different reasons, adopt Augustine. They fight over Augustine, okay? And I've heard dispensationalists, you guys, Ed made a good point this last Thursday. Why would you would anybody here go to a doctor or a dentist or any professional who hasn't been trained? Why would you go to a church where the only training a person has is being a DJ? His last job was a DJ at a casino. And that's the biggest church in this area. What if we had a doctor who had the most patients and he never went to medical school? Maybe we do. We got to check the credentials. I mean, that actually happens. But then as soon as you find that out, you leave. But everybody knows it there. And so I warn people of all the churches, if you leave this church, go to Pastor Tony's church. He's a man of God. Now, you're going to be 20 years behind our church because he isn't trained. But he's a man of God. I love him. He's one of the most gifted musicians in this area, you guys. His voice and his, I mean, he'll play the worship music and it's like you want to melt, you know, right? Sandy's gifted, Pastor Tony's really gifted. When, you know, they should do duets or something. I mean, and you guys, you know, all our songs, here I go again. All you song leaders are gifted. We have a great, you know, group. See, that's what I was saying to Mary. When you go down that road, it never ends in this church. You know, you're going to leave somebody out and regret it. So why would you go to somebody not trained? Or go to Pastor Tom. He's over there and he's trained. He was trained as a Lutheran. You know how many people he probably has in church? It breaks my heart. It shouldn't, because he's being blessed. Because the less number, the less we have in church, the more of God's glory. But it still hurts me to see that, because sometimes it still hurts him. He hasn't worked through, he hasn't been around as long as I have. He's been here maybe 10 years less than I, so he hasn't worked through this thing. He doesn't see it as a gift, you know, a blessing. But I do. The less people, the more God's glory. When more people start coming back, you guys, we're not going to have as much light. It's just a fact. We have certain, I love it when there's very few people, because my grace is sufficient for you, my power is made perfect in weakness. That's scriptural. Did I used to be like that? My idol is success. I used to be the opposite of that. So I was fighting, trying to build up the church with all these techniques that I know. I was fighting with that of what I know scripturally. That's been my greatest battle. Once that idol began to die in me, it's not dead yet, so don't test me, but it's mostly dead, you guys, mostly. It's still embers. I could still feed it. And it would grow back up and be even more influential in my life. But as that began to die, hey, this is easy what I'm doing today. Let the chips fall where they may. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you'll be able to, because everything I've said up to this point is scriptural, you know. But tell me, because it might refine what I'm saying. You know, call me on it. But don't go behind my back and talk now. Find somebody you can influence. If they do, ask them where it is in the Bible. I'm equipping you so you'll do that. Okay. Okay. Other questions? Or that was more of a message, wasn't it? Shauna.
This is a cultural
one of
mandate.
The women that my daughter loves. Okay, go ahead.
This is a question. Well, it's not really a question, but maybe you can comment on it. It's about the cultural mandate. I noticed
yes.
in
good,
commentaries,
good. That's
which
deep, that's when, a deep issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a question from commentary that
yes.
I've been reading.
Yes.
So the cultural mandate in Genesis 1:28
yes.
is clear.
Yes.
But the commentaries always allude to the mandate given to Noah.
Yes.
And it's clearly not the same mandate. So I'm not...
Yes.
So maybe you can
yes.
comment
yes.
on it.
What is the one thing that's changed?
Well, he doesn't
subdue
give the...
Subdue the earth.
Subdue and have dominion isn't mentioned...
That's
in
the point.
Noetic, yeah.
You're thinking redemptive historically. You're going to have to catch up to her, Tori, on this one. Well, that's a brilliant question.
No,
that's exactly that's what Meredith Klein says.
Comment on it.
That's what Meredith yeah. Klein says. That's it. You compare. How did you come up with that? Did you come with that
well,
on your own? Oh, the commentaries.
Was,
okay, the,
no, com- I was
the commentaries
that,
you came up with.
I don't know how I
it.
Came upon it.
Okay,
but,
well, with the commentaries
oh, yeah,
you did.
Thank you, Andrea.
Okay, brilliant.
You're such
point,
a good
brilliant point. Honestly, brilliant point. Shauna,
okay.
Honestly. And here's why. Because that's exactly the point. The cultural mandate is repeated in Genesis 9 from Genesis 1:28, but no longer the dominion.
Right.
It's being fruitful and multiply, but he doesn't repeat, I said the subduing, that's the dominion. That's the point. He's not calling, and the reason he's not calling them to have dominion is you can't have dominion now. Jesus is going to have dominion for us. It all fits together. Meredith Klein spends more than a few pages making that very point.
Okay. Well, I have a systematic theology study Bible.
And who's
and that's
I, and
Wayne
that
Grudem.
Really, who?
That's Wayne Grudem's.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's
and
like
Wayne Grudem would be really
yeah.
good. It's based
so
on
that
his
was
book.
Just a difference that I noticed from what you've been teaching
now,
us.
Now, did he point that out? Did Wayne
mm-hmm.
Grudem point that out?
It's in, well, it's in one of the commentary inside the book.
Yeah, and he understands redemptive historical, Wayne Grudem does.
Okay.
Although it's premillennialism, which is historical premillennialism, as I'm going to point out in an upcoming study, doesn't fit with his redemptive historical. Oh, now, you guys, if you guys have, by the way, the Wayne Grudem systematic theology, you guys do, don't you? Yeah, that big one. At the back, I just discovered this recently. He has so many resources. He has an essay on redemptive history. And if you go through that, it's only like 2 pages. It's powerful.
Yeah. In these commentaries,
great point.
It's hard to say who's making these comments because there's so many.
It's from his systematic theology, I'll bet. I bet the Bible is from his systematic theology.
Yeah, there's a lot of contributors, though. There's a list of contributors.
So. And most study Bibles are like that, yeah.
Okay.
But that's a great point. No, a great point. See how it fits together? It fits together, yeah. So people who are dominionists say we're to fulfill the cultural mandate.
Right.
Why didn't he tell Noah to? Because with the fall, we can no longer fulfill it. Now, see, that questions Al Mohler's see dominionism too. And Daniel Hummel's. Are you following me? Okay, you who are in adult Sunday school. I'm telling you guys, it all fits together. If it doesn't fit together, it's not right. You're not understanding it right. Okay, great point though, great point, yeah. Okay, did you have something, Andrea? Yeah.
You may address this you just mentioned it in your study coming up maybe, but in Sunday school this morning, you talked about dispensational premillennialism, classic or historical premillennialism, and then amillennialism.
That is crucially important.
So when I heard that interview, I heard them both say that they were historic or classic,
That's
I
right.
can't remember,
That's right.
premillennialists.
That's
so
right.
you didn't get to, I just wanted to ask, if you can, if it's too long of a thing, but a concise,
good luck.
Well, okay. So premillennialism, like dispensational, I'm familiar with that. With the rapture, then the millennium of 1,000 years where Christ reigns, and then the temple's being rebuilt. The temple will be built. There's sacrifices
going on.
But
what is historic
millennials?
What do they believe?
What do they believe
in a nutshell? And then we'll come back in adult Sunday school next week and expand upon it.
Yeah.
They believe, like dispensational premillennialism. Here's the commonality. They believe that Christ will come back in the second coming. Now, they both believe that, although dispensational premillennialism believes there's also going to be a rapture 7 years before. Historic classical premillennialism doesn't. They say there's no rapture. Okay, so Al Mohler, John Piper, Wayne Grudem, D.A. Carson, these are guys who we respect. I mentioned John Piper. They're historic classic dispensationalists. They believe that the second coming, Jesus is going to come back. Now listen, and you'll be able to sniff this one out. And at that point, the resurrection of believers is going to occur. But not the final judgment and not the resurrection of unbelievers. That isn't the way it's going to work. That's why, Andrea, now I'm going to expand upon that. That's why I've said over and over again that the Bible, both in the prophecies of the Old Testament, it's vaguer in the prophecy, but also all the teaching in the New Testament, it teaches that 3 great end times events are going to occur at Jesus' second coming. I keep hammering away at this. This is why, to make this distinction between I was setting it up. 3 great events are going to occur. They're going to occur concurrently, not divided by 1,000 years. Are you following me? Now, this is the biblical teaching, clear biblical teaching. And it also gives us an understanding of Revelation 20, by the way. Okay. So, 3 great events. You remember what they are? Listen, the resurrection of everyone. Judy asked that question last time. She asked this question probably because she's been taught historic, classic, premillennialism, like most of us have. She's been listening to good teachers. And so I am assuming, Judy. And so you asked this good question, or from previous churches you went to. I know she went to some good churches, she told me a long time ago. Yeah, so she's had some good teaching. I'm saying that part of it's not biblical, but that's just a little thing, Judy. I mean, it is. In the grand scheme of things, this is, and some people wouldn't think it's important, but it's important in redemptive history. It is important, but it isn't of topmost importance. So 3 things are going to occur in Jesus' second coming. First, now listen to what I'm going to say, the resurrection of everyone, both believers and unbelievers. The scripture is clear on that. Okay? The second is the judgment of all people. The final judgment is going to occur. And the third thing is, as you know, it's the clearing and cleansing of the earth, and which will lead to the uniting of the upper register with the redeemed earth. Those 3 things. will occur. The Bible is, New Testament is really clear. It's shocking how clear the New Testament is on that. Historic or classic premillennialism teaches there's 1,000 years, the millennium, on earth where resurrected believers will reign with Christ. Are you following me? Then the unbelievers will receive their, after 1,000 years, so 1,000 years different, then the unbelievers will be resurrected, then the final judgment will occur. Then the new heavens and new earth. So you got the 1,000-year gap. That 1,000 years doesn't mean that, though. They're taking the 1,000 years literally, but here's the weird thing. I'm sorry, Al Mohler and Wayne Grudeman. They don't hardly take any other numbers in Revelation literally. Now, I'm respectfully saying this, and I'll lose some more members. I'm sure of it. You know, I'm not, and it'll be good. I mean, praise God, so I'm not. But I don't like to, you see my poll? I don't like to lose. I want everybody to hear the truth, and I want everybody to grow. But the more people God takes away, the more he shows up. So I have mixed. So I don't mourn over it anymore like I used to. And plus, my idol of success is being dealt with, so I don't. Anyway, so do you see that difference? That's one of that. Now, that's not the only difference, but that's the main difference. And you can understand that, Andrea, because you're starting to see that. That's a big difference. Furthermore, now see, historic classic premillennialism, they think the rebuilding of the temple is bunk. They know it's bunk. It's bunk. It's just, I mean, it's, why do you need a temple? We're the temple of God. Don't you understand that we're the temple of God now? Jesus said that over again. He's the head, or if you want to use the Apostle Paul's terminology in Ephesians 2, he's the cornerstone, the apostles and prophets are the foundation, and we're the structure. That's the new temple, Ephesians 2, 20 through 22, right? Why do you need a rebuilt Old Testament temple? It's silliness, you guys. But again, their whole hermeneutic is off. They're being misled by Satan, just like all deception. I'm being misled by Satan, thinks I'm wrong. They're being misled by Satan. What's the effect? So what, Pastor? Wouldn't you rather have them in the church than going down to 95? No, because the people, if I dumbed it down, so I'm just saying, it doesn't really matter, I'm not going to preach on that. Nobody's growing. And I'm not fulfilling my ministry that I'm called to. Okay? So no, I used to think that for a while, but no, I don't. I can't do that because it's not what God is calling me to do. We're to preach the truth in season, when things seem to be going well, and out of season, when things don't, although they're really going well. God does the greatest work, you guys, when he doesn't seem like he's working. It's all underground, just like trees. The greatest growth for plants initially and all the way through takes place underground where nobody can see. It's the same thing with Christians. Same thing with the church, you guys. So we can't see what he's doing, God, you know. Okay, and the greatest transformation takes place, and the first transformation inwardly. I'm not trying to get Anita to come to church. And Anita, if you were bathed in legalism being a Mormon. That will take a long time for that to come out of you. Only the truth and God's grace slowly will get it out of you through sanctification. You need to be in a place like this where you're going to get a minimum amount of legalism. You're in the right place. You'll get some and call me on it. Because it works itself in. I fight it every, it gets turned around on me. I have to put on my gospel goggles all the time. So things are turned around. So because see, that's what legalism is. It's taking grace and it's putting it after works instead of where it belongs, before works. All authentic works of God and all character change is a fruit, an effect. In Greek, it's karpos. It means literally effect or result of real salvation. I don't want you faking it. I want to know if you're really called to do it. I want to know if you really want to be here. I want to know if you're really joyful. Okay? I want to know. I don't want to hype you up. I'm not your college coach. You're not the Colorado Buffaloes, and I'm trying to get you ready for a game. They use techniques. I don't care. I'm not saying he may be the most effective coach. I would have hired him. I mean, they're filling the stadium now. I'm not please don't misquote me or misunderstand me. That's the kingdom of the world. I'm talking about the kingdom of God. That's eternal. That's going to pass away. No matter what Deion Sanders' record is, I guarantee you in 50 years, nobody's going to remember whether the world continues or not. He's going to be a footnote if the world continues. At best, because he played two sports, Bill, that's why he's going to get his footnote. Unless he really turns out to be a girl. I don't care. All that's going to pass away. What I'm talking about is the kingdom of God that's growing in the midst of the kingdom of the world and that's eternal and is never going to pass away. That's what I'm talking about. So, in any case, that's your answer. I know. Now, I like the way you put that. Okay. Does that make more sense? But we'll come back. Yeah, and we'll come back, Andrea. Next Sunday, if you're able to come, we'll come back. And if you feel really led to come, don't show up for it. Okay. Okay, can I bring up... Okay, if somebody else has it, Donna. Uh-oh, now here we go. Here we go.
So, you know, I listened to the midweek recording and took some notes, just some terms that I kind of wanted clarified. The fundamentalists versus the dispensationalists.
That's real important. You guys are asking really good questions. Yeah.
And now I looked up fundamentalists in Wayne Grudem's book. It's
okay,
not
Wayne
in there.
Okay, Wayne Grudem, that'd be good. Okay, go ahead.
It's not in there. I went to my Bible dictionary, and it wasn't in there. I had to go to the Webster's.
Yeah, the Webster's won't pick this subtlety up, though, that particular term means in historic Christianity. Do you want to give that, what they say?
Well,
I'll tell you what it means.
You know, it was a long...
let me tell you what it means.
Okay.
Because I'm obviously could be more concise than you. No,
you can't.
I'm kidding, you guys. I'm kidding. I can't. Okay, I've proven it. Okay, fundamentalism was a pushback against Darwinism and scientism. So here was the dilemma that he was bringing up, Daniel Hummel was bringing up. Here's the dilemma, Donna. At the turn of the 20th century, Darwinism was working itself into the culture, now both in America and across, basically in the Western world. Darwinism, because a lot of the truths that Darwin pointed out are true. Now listen to what I'm going to say. A lot of the problem was how those truths were applied in other areas. Do you know what I'm saying? Microevolution is true. It's a profound point. Now others before Darwin had pointed it out. But nobody had systematized it like Darwin. So, you know, when people say you shouldn't teach Darwin, well, it depends how he's taught. You know, if he's taught for microevolution, that's a real important point scientifically. We can all see that occurs. Okay, you can see it in the bird population, you know, if you, as the environment, okay, but anyway, okay. So, but that worked its way into religion, Darwinism does. It questioned God's creation of the world, among other things, lots of things. And so the pushback on that theologically came in the form of?
Dispensationalism?
No. Fundamentalism. Okay, that's what you're talking about. Fundamentalism. The fundamentalist movement of the late 19th century and early 20th century. Now, here was the dilemma. The main ones that were pushing back against Darwinism were, guess what? Now say it. Dispensationalists. And they joined together with those covenant theologians to push back. And so the big question within those people, like let's say somebody like that, let's say that Meredith Klein, he wasn't in on this. This was before his time. Let's say he was there, or Charles Lee Irons was there. He has a fine theological mind, as you'll see, Charles Lee Irons. But when he comes, okay. But let's say he was there, you guys. He would have been thinking, now should we join together with dispensationalists or not against this? Now most theologians who are of a different, like let's say amillennial, okay, or classic,
historical,
premillennialists, okay, they decided to join together with him because they thought this was a bigger issue. We're countering this whole push where Darwinism is being misapplied in the culture. Do you see what I'm saying? And it really has devastating effects because everybody started thinking that, you know, God didn't create the world, he couldn't have, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? It has lots of it. So, but they joined together, okay, to do that. You see the dilemma? So we're joined together. So they were viewed now as one group. So one of the implications of that, like Daniel Hummel points out in his book, he brought this up with, I haven't read the book, Ed's the only one who's tried, but in the interview it was brought up, that's why I know it's in the book, is that most people started viewing Christianity as being entirely dispensational. And actually, as it became more popular for other reasons, both religious, spiritual, and sociological and historical reasons, it did become mostly, most of Christianity, evangelical. Now, if we're including Catholicism, which is, I mean, huge, you know, as far as numbers. If we're Eastern Orthodox beliefs and stuff, it's not statistically the greatest number. But if we narrow it down to evangelical Christianity, define that now, okay. Evangelical Christianity, still today, this addresses your question, Valerie, still today in 2023, the greatest number of evangelical Christians in America, I'm making a lot of qualifications, are dispensational. Okay, there's no question about that. Okay, we all agree on that. That's why as soon as you preach anything different, it clears out the church. Okay, I'm not focusing on that. I'm just helping you to see the connection. Okay, they run for someone with a poster of the rapture. Of course they do. If I wanted to draw people, I know how to do it. Come on, you guys. I've known that for 30 years. I'm pushing against that because I also know my idol is success. So I'm really battling it. Can't you see that? Okay, you know me well enough. Okay. So in any case, fundamentalism, that's why it's important to that discussion, because they join together. So it's real important to understand that fundamentalists included, and see, they came up with doctrines they believed in. They believed in, like, the Trinity and the virgin birth and salvation only through Christ. I mean, we all agree on it. Well, dispensationalists agree on this. None of the Darwinists, who are scientists, believe that. Now, listen, there were authentic Christians who believed some of what Darwin said is true, and they were right. You guys, he was a first-rate, don't just dismiss him as being, do you know that he was a pastor's kid? Charles Darwin was, yeah. So anyway, there you go, anyway. But, and I think it was a Presbyterian, you check me on that, yeah, pastor, anyway. So probably, we don't know for, but back then, probably, his dad was an authentic believer in preaching the gospel. So you never know. He wasn't elect, though. Unless it is in his life, Anita, we don't know. Be careful. My dad came here many times. When people ask me, I say, no, I don't think he was saved. But I don't know for sure, because he heard the gospel. You remember my dad? He would sit there, you know. And now, he didn't get up and go to the back because, you know, he didn't like what I was hearing. He just had to pee a lot, but anyway. My dad wouldn't do that. He didn't disrespect any. That isn't disrespect when you get up. If you got to go, go. Okay. I never even see the people who. So, I don't care about that. I was just talking about my dad. So erase that one. Because I'm starting to have to. No. In fact, right now, no. Okay. Anything? I had one more thing to bring up, and that's it. Anything? Any other questions? I did most of the talking. I'm sorry. I have one more thing, and then we'll break, okay? I had two things that happened this morning that were so biblical and so God. One of the things I've already described, and I'm not going to go back, in regard to the van and Doug driving, and this holder we had that God laid on my heart several times to get something better, and then it broke. But it broke with the right person coming down, the one who is youngest, and it could. Cheryl Casalo stepped on this stepladder. It didn't break. Okay, our guest, Tanya, stepped on it. You know, it was ready to break. I was going to replace that so many times. So the youngest one, the third one, who God knew could take a fall, Shira Casalo would have been back in the, you know, hospital. And you probably would have too, Tanya. Look what she has on her foot. But it didn't break. You know when it broke? When the young, healthy, beautiful Desiree stepped on it. and it shattered. And I came out, and God was teaching me that, because I was thinking about Deion Sanders, that bad things are good. So I said to Doug, I said, "This, you know, Doug, this is really good." Something like this, Doug. Yeah. Remember, my short-term memory isn't very good, so I might not quote right. "This is really good, Doug, because God had told me we need a new one here." And it could have been Cheryl. It could have been.